Your power stroke, diesel, backhoe riding, king of beers, 18-wheeler driving, living life in between the lines of clocking in and quitting time. But then the six-string circus comes to town. We hang them speakers over the crowd. When the lights come on, everybody's screaming, lighters in the sky, yeah, everybody's singing every word to every song of the girl that's taking home tonight. When the lights come on, everybody's feeling a hallelujah high from the floor to the ceiling. Yeah, the drink that we're drinking, the smoke that we're smoking, the party we throw, it's going all night long. When the lights come on, when the lights come on, you're a little shy thing with a wild side on a night like this, and just can't hide, cause it's time to live it up. So come on and raise your cup. If we're talking about memories, yeah, we're gonna make them. Talking about rules, you know we're gonna break them.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More than 18 million people have already cast their votes in 2 weeks from Election Day. Does that say anything about who could win the election? ABC Stephen Portnoy examines the numbers.
There's no way to know how early voters are actually casting their ballots, but in the key battlegrounds of Arizona and Nevada, registered Republicans are outnumbering Democrats. The University of Florida's Election Lab data shows Democrats now have a slight edge in North Carolina. So far, Democrats have returned more than twice as many mail-in ballots as Republicans in Pennsylvania.
On the campaign trail, former President Trump spoke at a Latino roundtable in Florida. He'll head to North Carolina for a rally. No events today for Vice President Harris, but she is sitting for a pair of television interviews. Federal prosecutors say the former CEO of Abercrombie & Fitch, along with his partner and another man, operated an international sex trafficking ring for over a decade. Authorities say there were 15 alleged victims. All three suspects are in federal custody. This is ABC. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump is calling for a federal investigation after seven people died this weekend when a dock gangway collapsed off the coast of Georgia. The victims were heading to a ferry when they fell into the water. Regina Brenson survived the collapse. She described falling into the water and being pulled by her uncle.
He kept pulling me and pulling me and pulling me under the water. And I kept saying to myself, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I had to take it, his fingers one by one and peel them over my shirt.
The group was visiting Sapelo Island, Georgia for a festival celebrating the Gullah Geechee community, descendants of African slaves. Restaurant chain TGI Fridays reportedly preparing to file for bankruptcy protection. Casual dining chain's been hurt by customer preferences for faster food along with tighter budgets. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Come on in to Total Wine & More. Prices much lower than a grocery store. Spirits, wine, beer for a whole lot less. Walking down the aisles makes you stop and say, yes! From mixing cocktails, a friendly get-together, or a brunch outdoors, Total Wine has everything you need. And more. With the lowest prices and best selection for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More.
Drink responsibly, B21.
This is the story of the one. As a warehouse manager, her job is to transform chaos into clarity and to see patterns where others see problems. Luckily, she's got a partner who shares her perspective. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products, backed by real person support and in-depth online resources, so she can tackle every task with precision and turn potential setbacks into streamlined success. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wisconsin Radio Network News. I'm Ted Ehlin. Early in-person voting starts across Wisconsin today. The state Republican Party is urging voters to take advantage. Party Chair Brian Schimming says when he took over, he wanted to try different things, including early voting.
Because I think we had spent too many years going into Election Day, 100,000 votes down, and trying to make it up in 13 hours. And so I committed when I became chair, we're not going to do that. And if that means using every available tool on the books.
Schimming says the Wisconsin Republican Party was the first state party in the country to endorse early voting. Former President Barack Obama campaigns in Madison this afternoon on behalf of Democratic presidential candidate Vice President Kamala Harris. Obama will be joined by Harris's running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Over the weekend in Las Vegas, Obama criticized former President Donald Trump's record on the economy.
I handed over to Donald Trump 75 straight months of job growth. And all he did with it was give a tax cut to the people who didn't need it, drove up the deficit in the process, and now he wants to do it all over again.
Following the Madison rally, Walz has a campaign event scheduled in Racine. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services wants to prevent childhood lead poisoning.
It's National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week, and DHS is highlighting methods to prevent and detect childhood lead exposure. Earlier this year, DHS issued updated lead testing recommendations calling for all children to be tested for exposure at ages 1 and 2. Children between 3 and 5 years old who have not been previously tested should also undergo screening for lead poisoning. Over the past decade, nearly 27,000 Wisconsin children under the age of 6 have been poisoned by lead. Visit the DHS website for more information. Sean Maloney, Wisconsin Radio Network.
You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Treg Prenshinsky. I'm a husband, father, farmer, and contractor. Growing up in western Wisconsin, I was taught to be honest, work hard, and stay humble. I've taken these values with me to Madison, where I've rolled up my sleeves and worked to make life more affordable for Wisconsin families and to make sure our communities remain a great place to raise a family. I ask for your vote November 5th so I can finish the job that I started. Paid for by T.E. Prenshinsky for Assembly.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Still unusually warm today with highs reaching those mid-70s. With the drought conditions and wind still whipping up a fire danger. Good news is we have chances for showers moving in this evening. But after midnight, winds shift to out of the north and blast us. This will suppress our highs tomorrow to just the mid-50s. But it'll be sunny. Check out Alexandria, Minnesota. ExploreAlex.com. Right now, it's 62 degrees.
This is AM 1430 WRDN, Duran Mondovia, Wabasha. The following program was pre-recorded.
This will be part of the trade landscape after the rapidly upcoming presidential election. And it doesn't matter if it's a Harris or a Trump administration. We'll talk tariffs this morning and Pure Prairie poultry left growers in the upper Midwest holding the bag with no feed in that bag. We'll get the latest.
Live from the forefront of the front edge of the news via Farm Journal Studios, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll begin with a conversation with former U.S. Congressman from Pennsylvania, Charlie Dent. Then it's Brian Winnikins from WRDN Radio in Wisconsin. And directly following the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Lurie.
All right, Davis A., thank you so much. It is 60 degrees and the sun is shining here in northeast Iowa.
We've got a tropical heat wave going here.
Okay, what do you got?
Oh, now wait a second. There's disagreement. My computer says 71 degrees and sunny. My phone says 67 degrees and sunny, headed for a high of 84 today, though.
Is there that much of a difference between your phone and your laptop?
Well, they're like 3 feet apart right now. Let me hold them closer together. Oh, no, there we go. Okay, if I hold them closer together. Yeah, there's a pocket. The pocket.
Everything comes together. But it rained this morning.
You know, here's a funny thing, and I'm not being silly. I had this conversation with my wife already. I don't know if I dreamed that it rained or if right before bed I was going to take the dog out and looked outside and saw that it had started to sprinkle a little bit or something and thought, nah, let's wait on that. I don't know if that actually happened, if I'm really thinking about it, because the phone says we got no rain. I don't know. So just a dream.
Wow. We had one band of showers go over us, and it's still in eastern Iowa. It's still along the Mississippi and stretches down into west central Illinois. And so that band of showers is still out there. But, you know, we picked up, I don't know if we even got a couple of hundreds, to be honest with you. I doubt if it was enough to wash the dust off of everything that lines the gravel roads out here in northeast Iowa. So pretty tough situation. All right, tariffs. We're going to talk tariffs. Charlie Dent is a former U.S. congressman from Pennsylvania. Looking forward to the conversation with Representative Dent. And Brian Winnikins, WRDN, has been keeping us up to speed on what's going on with the Pure Prairie poultry situation, issues. And he's going to come on and give us the latest in the developments there. All right, man, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, let's start with the weather in Alaska. A large, strong fall storm will bring coastal flooding, strong winds, and heavy snow to a large portion of the northern and western coast and interior of the state. Monsoonal moisture in a low-pressure area will produce excessive rain that may lead to flash, urban, and small stream and river flooding across Guam and the northern Mariana Islands. Shout out to Guam and the Marianas, I guess, there, Chip. But
yeah, I guess.
Sounds like Speedo weather is over in Alaska for the season.
Okay.
Okay. World Weather Inc. says, with more rain on the way this week, planting and establishment conditions will further improve or remain favorable across Brazil's main production areas. Those sustained rains are needed to support ideal long-term crop development. Private exporters reported sales of 359,500 metric tons of corn for delivery to Mexico during the 24-25 marketing year. The export sales continue, Chip.
Yeah, it's really good news. Corn market is reflecting some of that this morning. The demand is coming in. It's something that we've been talking about in the afternoon hour of AgriTalk for a couple of weeks now, and it is starting to have an influence on corn prices.
Well, just real quick, let's check in on some crop progress report highlights. Corn is 98% mature, compares to 95%. We're 65% harvested. That's ahead of average. Soybeans, 81% harvested, way above the 67% on average. Cotton, we've got 37% good to excellent. Winter wheat, 73% planted, just behind the average, but 46% emerged, which is also behind the average, which is 50%. The Dow and S&P 500 opened the week with losses, while the Nasdaq managed to finish higher yesterday after a late push pulled the index into positive territory. Crude oil prices rebounded yesterday, settling nearly 2% higher after last week's significant losses.
Yeah, Dow's wholesale under some pressure here this morning, too.
Dow under some pressure this morning. The wholesale beef prices continued to surge. Choice is up to $322.86, Chip. Select was up as well yesterday. Estimated packer margins have improved to more than $61 a head above break even yesterday. This according to HedgersEdge.com.
Should help the cash market.
And Chip, following a visit to a McDonald's restaurant by President Trump on the campaign trail, geez, Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren, Bob Casey, and Ron Wyden requested more information on McDonald's pricing decisions in a letter saying price hikes have outpaced inflationary pressures and input costs. Meanwhile, at a Michigan town hall with Vice President Kamala Harris and former Congresswoman Liz Cheney, moderator Maria Shriver confirmed only predetermined questions would be allowed. Critics on social media characterized the event as staged, with some calling it a pep rally and a prepped answer show. But isn't that what the campaign trail is, in fairness, Chip? I mean, you're just running pep rallies across the nation, right? Isn't that what you
do?
Yeah,
but don't bill it as a town hall, then. Town hall is supposed to be an open forum.
Uh-huh. Well, with that, do we need to get to Karen Bonert?
Oh, we do. We do. Absolutely. Let's bring in Karen Bonert. She's been out traveling around. Karen. Karen, fresh back from Europe. What did you learn?
Hey, Chip, I'm just back from Europe, where I traveled to Paris, France for the IDF World Dairy Summit. It was fascinating, to say the least. We had 1,200-plus attendees from 68 countries gather. Yes, indeed, this was a global event. And one thing that I really loved was hearing from the CEO from Danone, who spoke from the heart and honestly is a champion for dairy farmers. He shared that he understands the numerous challenges dairy farmers around the globe are facing, such as the impact of climate change and the mounting financial pressures. And he said, you know, we cannot talk about sustainability and not talk about profitability. And I truly feel, Chip, that dairy farmers are saying, finally, finally, it's not about greed. If we're not cash flowing, it truly doesn't matter if we're doing everything else right. All eyes are on Africa too, Chip. They said by 2050, one in four people in the world will live in Africa. So this is a huge emerging market that not only the United States has interest in, you know, tapping, so to speak, so does so many other countries. Countries around the world, from Asia to Oceania and everywhere else in between, talked about the challenges that they face. And it was water scarcity, it was labor challenges, as it was regulations. Not one country escapes challenges. The good news, Chip, is that dairy is becoming the protein source of choice around the globe. And as countries generate more disposable income, they're investing it in dairy. And this is a truly big moment as well. And so I feel with solid communication and truly working as a global nation, the dairy industry will continue to thrive and be a dominant force, if you will, to feed the world in the coming years. So yes, I'm back on U.S. soil. I'm exhausted, lots of travel. But Chip, I left inspired that despite the challenges that we face around the globe, that there is this, you know, steadfast commitment to feed a growing global nation. As a dairy farmer and as a dairy editor, I'm super proud.
Excellent. Thank you, Karen. Charlie Dent is up next.
Always up early. Always getting the job done. Always working as hard as you can. Always pushing for more. Because you never settle. For farmers who seek outstanding performance they can count on, the only brand is DeKalb Corn. Featuring a broad portfolio of products precision bred to maximize profit potential on every field. DeKalb brand. Never settle. See us at DeKalb.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
For some farmers, soybeans are on their mind 24/7. If you're all about the beans, then Asgrow brand is all about you. That's why we've dedicated ourselves to developing truly localized products. Products with leading genetics and top-tier weed management. Products that maximize the profit potential on every acre you've got. You're serious about soybeans, and we're serious about your success. Visit Asgrow.com. It's all about the beans. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
More moisture and more bushels with the InZone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
The moisture increase has been a huge benefit for us. We are hauling out more bushels than we hauled in. Paid for itself and beyond already the first season.
Call 712-520-6061.
Stop hoping for the best with your dry fertilizer. Apply Titan XC, a powerful biocatalyst that optimizes the breakdown of your dry fertilizer for increased nutrient availability and uptake. Power crop performance next season and maximize your yield, even with variable weather, prices, or soil types, with Titan XC. Visit CropFertility.com or contact your local Nutrien Ag Solutions crop consultant to learn more.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Retire.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. NMLS number 619731, copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
Tax season is just around the corner. Let the experienced tax professionals at Sunstrom & Company in downtown Durand help you explore ways you can save money on your taxes. Sunstrom & Company works with farms, corporations, family-owned businesses, and individuals to make your tax headaches disappear. Call or visit Sunstrom today for an appointment at their Main Street Durand location next to the Courier Wedge. Sunstrom & Company, local accountants providing quality tax and financial management since 1980.
In the morning, you're coffeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Davis, 2 weeks from today, presidential elections.
2 weeks from today, yeah.
Congressional elections, Senate elections. I mean, it's happening. Yep. Federal, state elections. It's all happening 2 weeks from today, man.
I think early voting opens in Missouri today, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I'd have to check it, but I think so, yeah. I mean, stuff is definitely happening. It's shaking loose here, bro.
No, no doubt about it. No
We're
doubt.
Almost to the end.
Yes, yeah. And in the ag community, I mean, we talk a lot about what the trade plans might be for a Harris administration or a Trump administration, and the plans to use tariffs for as a management tool in U.S. trade relations is being talked about quite a bit. But tariffs also come with risks of retaliation, disrupted supply chains. Let's take a look at the use of tariffs with former U.S. Representative Charlie Dent. Congressman Dent represented the 15th District of Pennsylvania, and he is a founding member of our Republican legacy. Congressman Dent, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, Chip. Great to be with you this morning. Happy to join you.
Good, good. Hey, before we talk trade policy and tariffs, tell me a little bit about our Republican legacy.
Yeah, we're a group of Republicans established by former U.S. Senators Jack Danforth of Missouri, Alan Simpson of Wyoming, and Bill Cohen of Maine. Basically, we're a group of Republicans who want the party to return to something more principles-based. It's fair to say our members are fairly dispirited. We're not crazy about the MAGA agenda, and we feel that there needs to be an alternative narrative to MAGA, and we believe in five core principles. We believe in the Constitution, the rule of law, peaceful transfer of power. We thought January 6th was an abomination. We believe in the Union. Abraham Lincoln was our founder. He wanted to keep this country together, not divide it. We believe in free markets. We're not talking about going back to 1850 or the 1920s, but you know, with modern reasonable regulation, but we support free markets. We're against things like these across the board indiscriminate tariffs. We think they're very destructive economically and will hurt a lot of farmers and manufacturers here in the U.S. We also believe in a strong international policy, foreign policy that embraces allies and rejects autocratic thugs like Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un. And we also think that the country needs to once again have some conversation about fiscal discipline. Neither party's having that conversation. So that's what we're about. We're trying to create this alternative agenda that we think the Republican Party is grounded in 170 years. These principles have sustained us and will carry us forward. And we like to challenge the MAGA. The MAGA philosophy.
Gotcha. Okay. You mentioned free and fair trade. I've always been a believer that there is no free or fair trade, but there can be freer and fairer trade. That should be the goal. What kind of a role do tariffs play in creating a freer and fairer trade environment?
Look, we have tariffs that get imposed that have been negotiated over the years, and we're not talking about those. What we're referring to today are what's being proposed by former President Trump as it relates to across-the-board indiscriminate tariffs of 10 to 20%. We think that is terribly misguided. Many of us who had served in Congress as Republicans, we voted for bilateral or multilateral trade agreements to open markets for American producers. Growers, manufacturers, service providers, and others. That's where we think we need to be headed. You know, we're not going to be able to win this trade, this international economic competition with China by simply trying to out-subsidize them or impose tariffs. We think this is a wrong-headed direction, and we do think that tariffs, there is a role for tariffs. Again, if a country is illegally subsidizing an industry, using slave labor in a particular industry, sure. Countervailing duties or tariffs are an appropriate mechanism. But across the board is where I get concerned. And to take it home, and by the way, I always like to point out, you know, the idea of retaliation is not only a risk, it's a certainty. So if we impose tariffs 200% on John Deere, because of what they're doing in Mexico, I can assure you the Mexicans are going to probably retaliate on American corn, on American corn growers. Mm-hmm. Take it to the bank or make it simple. I represented Pennsylvania and I had Hershey in my district, South Central Pennsylvania. We don't grow cocoa in the United States, but we need to import it by the shipload in order to make chocolate. And they're making 70 million Hershey kisses a day out there, which is a lot of loving. And now you need a lot of cocoa to do that. So, you know, the price goes up 10 to 20%. This is an impact on American manufacturing. Or when they tried to impose the tariffs on aluminum in the name of national security, again, a company like Hershey, they wrap all those kisses in a very fine aluminum foil. There's very limited domestic supply, most from Europe, some from South Korea, some from Europe, and a little bit from China. And so the whole point was, okay, well, the price of packaging goes up. I mean, so these are the kinds of, we have to think yeah. about these consequences. You know, we saw this with Smoot-Hawley back in 1930. You know, global trade dropping $3 trillion to $1 trillion, and every economist of every stripe will tell you that those across-the-board tariffs at that time exacerbated the Great Depression. We were actually starting to, the market was starting to rebound at the time of Smoot-Hawley in 1930. And then this happened, and it really prolonged the Depression. So, and again, I think American agriculture has the most to lose in a trade war. Yep. There really aren't just losers.
Yep. Well, I tell you what, Congressman, the reason that I wanted to get you on here and talk about this is because your district is so heavily dependent on trade, on international trade, not just state sure. by state, but international trade. And that's why I wanted to get you on here. Now, the Biden administration or the Biden-Harris administration could have removed some of those Trump-era tariffs. Why didn't they?
Well, because they're essentially protectionists, too. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, look, you know, historically, at least since the Second World War, and certainly during my time in Congress, it was the Republican Party that was the party that was trying to open up markets, that was really promoting more, you know, freer trade. It was the Democrats, because of their pressure from organized labor, that has really made them more of a protectionist party. Of course, then came Donald Trump, you know, who more or less adopted the AFL-CIO position on trade, being much more protectionist. And so the Democrats are still where they've always been policy-wise. Not all of them, but most of them. And so now I think you'll see that, you know, so the Biden administration really kept a lot of the Trump tariffs. And I don't know that it's really helped us. And by the way, these tariffs tend to be inflationary. If we add them to the extent they're being suggested, it will certainly contribute to inflationary pressure.
Okay, there's an ongoing debate, and I'm not exactly sure why, but there is an ongoing debate in answering what should be a very simple question. And that very simple question is, who pays for tariffs?
We, the American consumer. That's a very simple question. I mean, the importer pays the tariff. It's tax. And so that's, I mean, it's not like China's going to pay a tax. Well, you know, China will suffer because I suspect, or not just China, but any country, you know, Trump often says China's going to pay the tariffs. Well, not really. The way it works is that whatever country is exporting to us, they will feel pain because I suspect whatever it is they're selling to us, they will sell less of. And so they will feel that pain. But at the end of the day, those products that do come through into the United States, the tariff will be paid for by the American consumer. I mean, that 10 or 20% gets added on at the border. That's what will happen when it comes through. And so there's no way of escaping that. And so that's the harsh reality. And so I don't know. I mean, you know, go ask the folks at Wharton. You know, that noise you hear is Wharton wanting their business to be back from Donald Trump every time he says, you know, China's paying for the tariffs. They're not.
Okay. He also says that it will not cause an interruption or disrupt the supply chain of the products that we really need. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I would have to respectfully disagree. I mean, there are many people who are making things in this country, and they rely on various imports that are inputs into their manufacturing process. Mm-hmm. And if the price goes up significantly, obviously it affects the cost of their production. And so that will have an enormously disruptive impact. Now, here's another great example. You know, the big Dutch company that makes the machines to help produce the semiconductors, the chips, you know, they're in the Netherlands. You know, those machines, I'm told, sell for hundreds of millions of dollars. So, okay, so put a 10, 20% tariff on that. Well, guess what? The price of that machine goes up. That's a lot. Now, we're talking real money here. You know, it goes up on a sale of a few hundred million bucks. And this is, of course, we're trying to make chips so that we can compete against China and, you know, protect our own national security in the process, make these essential chips. So this is it. So, I mean, you speak to disruption. That is disruption. And, you know, I could even go back further. Like, and this is where, you know, both Biden, Trump and Harris, all of them are, I think, in many cases, wrong on some issues. Look at they're trying to sabotage the Nippon U.S. Steel deal right now in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Nippon's trying to invest a few billion dollars to upgrade American steel facilities to make steel here, and they're all against it. I guess they'd rather have the taxpayer subsidize these industries.
Congressman, we are out of time. You have added to the conversation here. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Chip.
All right. Former U.S. Congressman Charlie Dent from Pennsylvania.
You say you never give in to a meltdown and never fill your feed with kid photos. You say you'd never put a pacifier in your mouth to clean it and never let them run wild through the grocery store. So when you say you'd never let them get into a car without you there, no, it can happen. 1 in 4 hot car deaths happen when a kid gets into an unlocked car and can't get out. Never happens. Before you leave the car, always stop. Look. Lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine. Not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive.
Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
No one should have to navigate herd health alone. Luckily, you don't have to. A successful operation requires teamwork. Visit bio-vet.com and let us help identify key challenges and offer expert solutions unique to your situation. We evaluate your full herd health plan and make economical recommendations to your operation. Learn more about our team and products for herd health at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
Double-digit losses in the milk markets with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnekins. At the Mercantile Exchange, November milk down 53 to 2036, December down 62 to 2046, January down 31 to 2021, and February down 32 at 1978. Live in feeder cattle markets, mostly higher on the day, as box beef prices were mostly higher on the day. Also, some of the southern cash cattle contracts were a dollar higher, and that's helping to support the markets. Hog markets, meanwhile, moving mostly higher on the day. Again, expectations of strengthening consumer and packer demand supported the market. October live cattle up $1 to $1.88. October feeder cattle up $1.92 to $2.49.50. December hogs up 57 cents to $78.85. Chicago Board of Trade. Corn, soybeans, and wheat all mostly higher. Export demand with another 359,000 metric tons of corn being sold to Mexico supporting the markets. Strength in some of the energy markets also providing some support to the markets, along with a little bit of profit taking and short covering in the market. December corn up 6 3/4 to 416 1/4. November beans up 10 to 991. December wheat up 4 3/4 to 577. Minneapolis wheat December up 3 3/4 to 617 3/4.
Dairy farmers, extend the life of your investment and keep the milk inspector happy when you resurface your mangers, feed bunks, feed carts, and more with a microepoxy surface from Osteoplastics and Supply. The microepoxy surface provides for easier cleaning of feed bunks, less feed waste, offers a non-skid surface, and withstands extreme temperatures and chemicals. You can repair your floors and equipment for less than replacing, and the increased milk production will pay for the installation. Find out more. Visit osteoplastics.com.
Introducing Riverside Plaza, now open at the shop bays of Napa Auto Parts in Durand. Riverside Plaza is a Napa Auto Care Center offering expert service at a price you can afford. Get oil changes starting at just $22.50, plus oil and filter, including a full inspection and fluid top-off. Riverside Plaza also provides tire sales, repairs, fleet maintenance, diagnostics, and wheel alignments. Enjoy convenient drop-off and loyalty rewards. Open until 6 p.m. daily and Saturdays by appointment. Riverside Plaza, 403 West Madison Street, downtown Durand.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Davis?
Chip.
Did you see that Ozzie is finally in the Rock Hall of Fame? How did that How did that not happen, like, on day three or something like that?
Here's the thing, man. Everybody wants to get there in a hurry. It takes time. Even for the greats, it takes time. It takes time. But he got there. That's the
thing. Yes, he did. All right. Earlier this month, Pure Prairie Poultry closed its processing facility up in Charles City, Iowa, declared bankruptcy. That left Pure Prairie's contract growers holding the bag with millions, honestly, of broiler chickens and no resources to take care of those chickens. State officials, Minnesota and Iowa, they apparently had the authority to step in and to do something, either euthanize those chickens or feed them out and have them processed, or give them away. Officials in Wisconsin, however, did not have that authority to help poultry producers, which created a very dicey situation for some of the growers there in the states. Brian Winnikins is the farm director and much more at AgriTalk affiliate WRDN up in Durand, Wisconsin. He's been following the developments in the situation from the beginning and has been doing a great job of keeping us up to speed on what has been happening. It's time to get Brian in here to get him to get us up to speed. Brian, my friend, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing real fine, real fine. So, Brian, let's start. You know what? I want to start at the beginning on this. How did you learn about the situation? How did you first hear that Pure Prairie left producers kind of holding the bag there in Wisconsin?
Well, that would have been on October 9th. Well, I was at the Durand City Council meeting covering that for the station, and I received a message from a listener that told me about it. And then Rhonda, my partner, she sent me a private message saying, hey, I just received this message. You guys, look what's going on. That's kind of how it started.
Okay. And you first started to dig into this, talking to some of the producers out there. What did you learn?
Well, the biggest thing was the producers were pretty much just, they were told early in October, that first week of October, right around the September 30th, October 1st, contracts are done. Have a nice life. Pretty much that's it. There was really no guidance given to the poultry growers. They were just told, you're done. And the more when I talked with some of the farmers, this had been something that had been actually going on really in 2023 when things had been going well. And then all of a sudden, first bonuses are being delayed. But don't worry about it. We'll get caught up. Mm-hmm. And then in April, there were some producers weren't getting paid. But don't worry about it. We'll get caught up. And, you know, we have a great summer ahead, and don't file anything with the Packers and Stockyards Act and that sort of thing. They just got strung along, Chip. I mean, it's as simple as that. Yeah. And really, you know, the company declared bankruptcy in the last half of September. However, when you have assets of 50 to 100 million, but liabilities of 100 million to 500 million, needless to say, creditors were like, no, we're not going to do that. And actually, the bankruptcy was dismissed on, I think it was September 27th, if I'm not mistaken. And then basically that just started the rest of this process.
Okay. All right. Some of the contract growers up there in Wisconsin, as I understand it, just said, listen, if you want these birds, come get them. Is that right?
Yeah, they tried to do that. One of the farmers, actually started to speak out, had spoken out to a television station in Iowa, I think it was. And the company saw that and then said, well, we're not going to do anything for you. They kind of retaliated. But they were wanting direction. What do we do here? Take these birds. And remember, Chip, okay, if the company's it's done, there's going to be no bankruptcy, no reorganization. Well, creditors, there's your assets. Because remember, technically, those birds were still company assets. If they're company assets, And the company's belly up, the creditors, then they're their assets, and the banks and all that, they weren't going to do anything.
Right. Right. Okay. So you've been doing a great job keeping this issue in front of people, asking the right people the right questions. What's being done now? What is the status?
Well, the status for the farmers here that basically either sold the birds for a dollar or just gave them away for donations. The barns have been cleaned out. So that's all been done. And now it's, we have to pick up the pieces. I mean, Chip, one farmer I chatted with on Saturday, the 12th, excuse me, he was like, you know, I asked him, well, what do you do now? He goes, I'm not sure. I have $300 to my name, and see that barn? I have a $20,000 payment coming up.
Okay.
So there's the financial part of it for the farmers. There's the animal welfare part of it for, you know, the animals. And, you know, Iowa and Minnesota, they had some type of plan in place, but it right. also was who's paying for it. Well, thank you, Chip, in Iowa, and
yep.
those folks yep. in Minnesota, thank you for doing that, while the company and the lenders just get to walk away.
Right, right. Now, is that going to change in Wisconsin? I know that you've talked with some state lawmakers about changing that so that there are some protections for those contract growers.
Yeah, there's already talk about that. I talked with our local state representative who's he's in the state assembly, and his district is pretty much in the center of this. He's already talked with the chairman of the state agriculture committee. Of course, it's election time, so mm-hmm. yeah, you know, nothing's going to happen here with this right now. Potentially a lame duck session, quote unquote, or an extraordinary session in Wisconsin, because yeah. the legislature isn't in session throughout the year. But even then, this isn't going to be something that is going to happen in a week. This right. is, and even on a federal level, you know, Senator Klobuchar, she's on Senate yeah. Ag. She had said, yeah, maybe, you know, we haven't done the farm bill. Maybe we should do something and add to the farm bill. So did Congressman Van Orden, who's on the House side, who's on the House Ag Committee. Yeah. He had talked with Chairman Thompson actually on Thursday the 10th when I was at one of the farms in Trempealeau. He had him on the phone and they were chatting about this. But there's so many issues, Chip, that this isn't yeah. going to be easy. There's, you know, yeah, the farmers paying them, the growers and paying them. But then there's the animal welfare aspect of this. And if yeah. you look, Chip, you know, again, Wisconsin's taken a pretty big black eye for this. I totally get that. Mm-hmm. But if you call Department of Agriculture representatives across the upper Midwest or across the country, I'm betting most of those Department of Ags would say the same thing. Well, for animal right. welfare, we don't have anything in place for this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And Senator Baldwin is pushing fairly hard to get some efforts at the federal level to provide some protection, right?
She is, and you know, she's working with Senator Klobuchar on that, I think, okay. pretty much through the farm bill. But again, Chip, what's that protection going to look like?
Right.
And who pays for it? That's the question I have.
Well, yeah, taxpayers, period. End of story. But who's going to pay for this.
And I don't think that's right. I think that's, you know, then there's no incentive for these companies or the financial people to care or to do anything about it. I mean, remember, while, you know, there's all these creditors, 200 to and more, that are owed $500 million potentially, somebody has a guaranteed loan from USDA that they gave Pure Prairie for $39 right. million, and they don't care.
Right.
They don't care what to do. So to right. me, there's got to be something else in here to make them accountable, be it an insurance bond or something, if anything, at least for the animal welfare part of it, so that taxpayers yep. like in Iowa and Minnesota right now are footing the bill for this.
Right, right. Brian, Pure Prairie got like a $46 million loan from USDA, or a loan or a grant. What happened to that money? Go ahead.
That's the question that Senator Klobuchar has, Senator Baldwin has, Congressman Van Orden have. They've all three have said we have to have a oversight investigation. Not only where did the money go, but how did USDA make these, you know, approve this? It was about a $39 yeah. million dollar guaranteed loan and about a $6 to $7 million grant. All of this in regards to what happened with the pandemic and trying to expand meat processing. So that's kind of where all of this came from. But their questions are, hey, where did the money go? How did you guys determine this company was going to be viable or were worth getting the money in the first place? From what farmers have told me, they've said that the board or people on the board, some of these leaders of this company had absolutely no idea how the poultry industry worked or had worked in it before, but had run stuff into the ground. Can't confirm any of that, but that's what the farmers were telling me, you know. And then you have the workers, you know. I mean, I just received this today, you know, from one of the workers that, you know, with the way that the company is, there is no way that the workers are going to get paid. So now what do we do? And is there going to be a lawsuit? You know, state of Iowa could file a lawsuit in this, but if there's no money, the state of Iowa's getting nothing back. I mean, that's just the reality here. And the other part of this is this only affected the broilers, not the breeding stock. The breeding, the breeding stock was taken over by a company, I think, out of California. So those folks at least ended up had a place to go somewhere.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you what, we're not done with this story. We just needed to get an update and kind of bring us up to speed on what the current status is. And Brian, you've helped us do that. Thank you so much, buddy.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
All right. Brian Winnikens, WRDN up in Durand, Wisconsin. He's been on top of this story from the very beginning and helping to keep us up to speed. Now he's helping to keep you up to speed as well. Davis and I will be right back.
Wisconsin soybean farmers are fueling Wisconsin. In 2021, the value of Wisconsin soybeans was $1.61 billion. That fuels our state's economy, communities, and Wisconsin's future. Wisconsin soybean farmers fuel our state, country, and the world while protecting the land and water. Learn how the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board and Wisconsin Soybean Association are working hard to fuel our farms and future. Visit wisconsinsoybean.org.
At Jerry Bear and Sons, your Golden Harvest seed dealer, their best skill is knowing how to listen. Because once they understand your operation and goals, they can offer the right products to perform in your fields. From the Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to expert insights, it's an answer to what they have heard from you. Get fall cash discounts when you order your Golden Harvest seeds now at Jerry Bear and Sons, just off Highway 25, Durand.
Eric Hovde's been caught lying again. Caught lying about Tammy Baldwin 20 times in his ads. The latest, quote, Hovde falsely claimed that Tammy Baldwin supports sex change surgery on minors. The truth? Tammy Baldwin doesn't support that, and there's no sex change surgeries on minors anywhere in Wisconsin. None. Hovde also lied about Baldwin, quote, giving our money to a transgender clinic. That's been found false three different times. The Journal Sentinel says the truth is Baldwin supported mental health funding for a homeless youth shelter. That's right. Hovde's attacking a place for homeless kids. We all know what Eric Hovde is doing. He's trying to scare you, but they are all lies. Wisconsin is better than this. We're not going to let some billionaire California banker lie his way into the United States Senate.
I'm Tammy Baldwin, running for Senate, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Tammy Baldwin for Senate.
Host of The Dirt, an economics podcast featuring down and dirty agronomic science to help grow crops and bottom lines. Here's a highlight of our latest episode.
What can a grower do to reduce the amount of nitrogen that they're losing, whether that be to leaching or volatilization or denitrification?
I would say the biggest thing we use here is usually number one source of nitrogen is fall applied, and I would say almost 99 to 100% of the growers that I'm using are putting on nitrogen stabilizer. But I would say the bigger thing is that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, there's a lot more trending of nitrogen to spring applied, and then following that back up with more in-season nitrogen as the crop is closer to needing it, and when it's there and it's actually growing, that's when it's pulling it up.
Yeah, so to add on to what Jeff mentioned, nitrogen stabilizers, there's actually multiple different forms, right? So we think about nitrification inhibitors, so that blocks the conversion of ammonium to nitrate, which is the form that can be leached out of that system. We also have urease inhibitors, so if you're using urea, UAN, even manure, you use these and it helps keep the nitrogen in the urea form, gives time to hopefully get some rainfall washed into the soil. So those are really the two big ones. We also have some extended release fertilizers, so coated fertilizers, right? They have a coating on them. Over time, it breaks down and releases the nitrogen into the soil. So that helps keep that nitrogen in the form that we want to keep it in the soil to where the plant can use it.
If you'd like to dig deeper, listen to the full episode on your favorite streaming site or on our website, nutrien-economicswithak.com, and stay up to date with the latest crop nutrition research and news to help you make better business decisions. New episodes of The Dirt drop every Tuesday, so be sure to tune in weekly.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Pioneer brand Z-Series soybeans are bred to defy expectations. So it's no surprise they're getting rave reviews, and that has more than farmers talking. In fact, a grain elevator wrote, "Sweet mother of pearl, trailer after trailer of Z-Series. It's never ending. We need a break." Safe to say, everyone is feeling the impact of Z-Series soybeans. Unleash your greatest harvest yet at pioneer.com/new era.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. We are live on this weekday, in fact. Glad you're here with us. Davis Michelson with Chip Flory as well. It was great to touch base with the former congressman out of Pennsylvania, Congressman Dent.
Yeah.
Today, what I really liked about it, was just his notion that the Republican Party is not a MAGA monolith.
Right.
This is the guy who's leading the party now, and who has the support of the group. But there are still other ideas out there. He's talking about Constitution, peaceful transfer of power, free markets, strong international policy, and fiscal discipline. I don't see anything wrong with any of that.
Right.
Maybe in practice.
Right. And maybe in practice
it shakes out weird, but.
Yeah, and that's the reason that I asked him to talk a little bit about our Republican legacy, so that he could lay a groundwork so that we would know from from where he is coming in his comments on tariffs and trade policy.
Yeah,
that's exactly why I asked him to do that.
And I'm glad you did.
I think he missed one. Oh, Unity is in on that as well.
Okay, yep. And he, you know what I like is he talked about the relationship with foreign trade and made it specific. 70 million Hershey's Kisses a day. 70 million Kisses a day. That's too much even for me. I mean, I like Kisses, you know, in all forms.
Oh, yeah.
But 70 million, that's too many. You know,
that's
you go long chapstick
number.
On a day like that is what you do.
Okay.
You go long chapstick. But we're talking about imported cocoa. We're talking about imported aluminum from various sources.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't think about that stuff.
I knew that he would comment on the cocoa. That's the whole reason that I thought, you know what? This guy's got perspective that we probably could use.
Yeah.
So, and it was because of the cocoa trade and Hershey's. I'll admit, I didn't even think about the aluminum.
Yeah.
And the amount of aluminum that they use, that fine aluminum to wrap up those Hershey's Kisses. Unbelievable.
Yeah, what is that? 70 million little 1-inch squares, would you call it, a day of aluminum we need?
Yeah. It's a phenomenal amount. You can fill up a gymnasium pretty quick.
Yeah. How did his comments strike you when he took us all the way back to the 1930s, across-the-board tariffs exacerbated the Depression and prolonged it? I'm not sure that I'd heard anyone drill it down there.
The way that that struck what your me thoughts is, I've got to go back and take a look at that a little bit deeper and have conversations with people that have studied it, that I trust. I need to look at that a little bit further. No doubt about it. But to me, I understand the argument that he was making and how it did put some additional stress on consumers because tariffs tend to bring some inflationary pressures into the marketplace.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the whole issue that leads us to Nippon Steel. Apparently the deal was made in December of 2023, but it's hung up in, I don't know, somewhere in legislative approval or something like this. Now, I have been fully willing to jump on the bandwagon. U.S. Steel means U.S. Steel.
Yeah.
It's a crucial industry for our nation. Got us to where we are. I don't know. If Nippon wants to come in and infuse with, I forget what the dollar amount was. I don't know how to think about this either, dude. This guy kind of turned my thinking on its head a little bit when it comes to some of these Republican sorts of issues.
Right. Right. That's the whole reason that I wanted to have him on was to add to the conversation. I don't think I can, with any kind of authority, say this is how the Nippon situation is going to influence the economy, and therefore
neither can I.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is one of those issues that we are watching very, very closely. And it gets back to one of the first things that I said to Congressman Dent, and that is I grew up believing that there is no free or fair trade, but there can be freer and fairer trade. And that gets us back to reciprocity. And if we are allowing market access to the U.S., access to the U.S. market, then whoever we are importing product from into that situation needs to provide the same level of access into their markets for U.S. products.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That is the bottom line of why those that promote or encourage the use of tariffs, that's their whole goal, is to gain as much access to those markets as we are giving access to the U.S. market. And I get that. I get that. That is that's part of the journey to get us to freer and fairer trade.
Yeah.
So I understand it. The question is how much do you want to get beat up in the process?
Right. Yep.
You know, and we look back at the tariffs that were put in place under the Trump administration and the fallout that we had in the soy complex, the corn market, and some of the other ag markets, that was a significant fallout. Now, farmers will say, yeah, but that was covered by the market facilitation program payments. That's true. That's true. Taxpayers will say, yeah, and we had to cover the cost. So there's that give and take on all of these issues, and we need to look at it from all those different angles to try to come to some sort of a consensus on this. You know what? Yeah. We'll talk more about it this afternoon. Carl Setzer from Consus Ag Consulting is going to be on. Do you know Carl? You know, remember
I've heard
that
of him.
Guy?
Yeah, okay. The commodities cowboy, as I recall.
I think that's exactly right. Tomorrow morning, Senator Chuck Grassley here on AgriTalk. Jeff Ellis is a technical services manager at AMVAC. Jeff, talk to me about rootworm control.
Yeah, rootworm control is very important. Most people think that rootworms cause over $1 billion in losses for growers. And so Index is a top-performing liquid at Plant Insecticide that growers can use to really help maximize their yield potential of their crop, regardless of which trait package you're using, whether using a trait or not, or which individual trait did they choose to use. And so Index contains two modes of action. They're very complementary to each other, so they both do a really good job on corn rootworm control, but then also control other seedling and seed pests such as corn cutworms, grubs, seed corn maggots, and wireworms.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff. That is Jeff Ellis, Technical Services Manager at AMVAC. To learn more, head to www.amvac.com.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-230-2777. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100,000.